But if you want, let's take a vote. I know that our next 6:30 guest is here very early.
That might be lucky.
You take a
for
vote?
Him.
You think maybe we should take a vote and maybe ask Mr. Dan Shores to come to the table a little bit earlier?
I'd vote yes.
Would you vote yes?
Sure.
Ryan, because this is a three, we can't have it. We can't. Would you vote yes too? All right. So my vote, being the chair, I don't have to vote. I'm only the tiebreaker. Mr. Dan Shores is actually in the house. Mr. Shores, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And am I interpreting that correctly when you say vote? Does that mean you're going to vote for me, or is that?
Well, I wouldn't vote for you, because first and foremost, as a journalist, I don't vote.
Oh, wait a second. That doesn't make any sense.
If I vote, I've decided.
Okay. All right. I think I see that logic somewhere, but
I'm a journalist, so the idea is for me not to. If I vote for somebody, if I choose, that's the problem. Because my job is to be able to talk to not only you, but maybe your Democratic opponent come, if you're fortunate to win the Republican nomination come September, and if it's you squaring off against Mr. Keating, I'm getting the look from Christine James, the look of death. I do not vote.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify. So you're saying on voting day, on election day, the first Tuesday in November, you're saying that you don't go in and cast a vote?
No, I'm the guy who's outside interviewing all the people who have voted for one or the other.
Okay, so you're saying you're playing or you play a significant role in the political process, just not voting.
That is correct. My job is to be, how can I say it, give folks a chance to hear from the candidates. Mm-hmm. To hear from all the candidates.
Of course.
And give them a chance to understand who you are, mm-hmm. and then make a proper vote.
That sounds good to me. Sounds like the, you know, American system, freedom of speech is alive and well in here in Marshfield, Massachusetts, as well as across the country, I hope.
Well, as we had talked about earlier, before you had entered the room, you will make the fourth Republican. Mm-hmm. There are four Republicans that are vying for the nod, correct, come September.
And that's my understanding. I haven't heard of anyone else enter the race, so that's correct.
And when does everybody have to have the signatures in by in order to be a part of this process? I mean, can anybody still, albeit crazy, take out papers within the next week and make an attempt to get all those signatures?
Sure, that's certainly possible. The first week in May is when the deadline for the submitting the signatures to the Secretary of State is. Mm. And each candidate needs 2,000 certified signatures to get on the ballot, which means you need to collect more than that in terms of raw signatures, because not all signatures are approved by the town clerks. And so it is a significant effort, but if somebody wanted to pull papers and try to get on the ballot, they certainly could do that since it's April.
Well, that definitely would be very, very interesting.
So how are you doing with your signatures?
We're doing very well. We're actually almost done with our effort. So
congratulations. That's a lot of work.
Thank you very much. Yep, we have a good force of people working for the campaign, working on behalf of the campaign, and we are very, very fortunate to have the type of volunteer support that we have so far, and we're very excited about our campaign. We're very excited about this campaign now and also going forward. As you know, it's a very long primary season here in Massachusetts. The primary is on September 9th, and so this campaign is going to go through the spring and summer. And we'll find out who the winner is on September 9th.
Well, what we're going to do right now is we're going to learn more about you after we take a little bit of a break. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk and more Dan Shores. Don't go anywhere. And we are back from traffic. Just a couple of a quick housekeeping notes. If there is a part of the show that you miss, or if you want to hear it again, we do our best to make sure that we put them up on the WATD website, the podcast site, and you also can be able to hear them in iTunes. You just have to go in iTunes and search for Monday Night Talk, and whatever the particular podcast is, well, then all you have to do is search for it that way. Now, we are, in fact, waiting for Keiko Oral. I'm sure she'll join us in a few moments. Of course, she is the state representative of the 12th Bristol District. I think a part of that is Middleborough, Taunton, and Freetown. She'll correct me, of course. And I, although I do have a few moments here where I can pull it up, I can be somewhat accurate. And we'll hope to speak with her in just a couple of moments. Any housekeeping on your end, Paul, that you want to chat about for half a moment while we wait for the representative to join us?
Oh, gosh, there's always so many things going on. I spent last week actually at a writer's conference, which was pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah.
And what's the purpose of that?
I'm actually focusing on a book for my business where we are going to be talking about things women should know before they were widowed. So lots of people focus on books after someone's widowed, but this is getting them prepared beforehand.
Really?
Yeah. Sadly, the average age of widowhood is 56.
Really? Well, I would think for women, right? Because guys usually, we as men, we tend to drop off a lot sooner.
Well, yeah, the women are widowed at 56. The men could be, yeah, they're dying all around there.
That doesn't look good for me.
Uh-oh.
It doesn't. I mean, I'm still less than 10 years away from that number, but it doesn't leave me a lot of hope.
Well, just prepare. That's all I can say. Prepare for the loved ones in your life so you don't leave a mess behind.
Say that the first thing out of your mouth would be about the beautiful spring weather that we've finally begun to enjoy.
Actually, we were in the Berkshires last week, and it was still a little bit more winter. So coming back to the South Shore was just terrific to see everybody out in their yards. People are starting to mow their lawns already. The flowers are coming up, getting ready for all those daffodils to go and bloom. So it's coming. It's exciting.
See, I'm not exactly at that particular point right now.
Oh, no?
I'm not, no. It's still brown. You know, I thought about it this weekend. I thought about it.
So you have to put your green glasses on. You know, it's all
really?
In perspective.
Is that what I have to
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely. It's all in the perspective. If you
know.
See it, it'll be there.
Really?
Yep. I'm a firm believer in it.
So you're just out there raking the leaves and...
Yep. Really? I planted my pansies yesterday.
Really? Now, where was Bill, your husband? Where was he? What was
Actually,
he doing?
Actually, while I was planting pansies, he was raking and taking down the dead grasses from last year, the ornamental grasses. So he was busy.
So it was a team effort.
Yep, absolutely. We're a good team. Team Harris, good team.
So I'll have to talk to the significant other.
Yeah.
Yeah, because usually I'm out there. I'm the guy who's out there. I actually, you know, whether it's cutting the grass or if I'm dragging off the branches that have fallen during the winter.
Yeah. I had the fun job planting. He did the harder work.
I was the guy who went out and spent, you know, dropped $200 on a blower so I could blow all the leaves into a pile.
Ah.
Raking things overrated.
That's where the lawnmower comes in quite handy over those piles of leaves, too.
Yeah, but I get the lawnmower with a bag.
Okay.
It doesn't do it, but it just doesn't.
Then you have to empty it.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
Yeah. If it's green stuff, fine. But like leaves and everything.
Yeah.
I'd rather blow it into a pile and go from there.
Okay.
So just something to keep in mind.
A few of the neighbors were doing that yesterday and today, so.
Okay. Well, we don't, again, we are expecting to hear from Keiko Oral. I don't know if maybe she might have been caught in a meeting, but if you want, let's take a vote. I know that our next, our 6:30 guest is here very early.
That might be lucky
for
him.
You think maybe we should take a vote and maybe ask Mr. Dan Shores to come to the table a little bit earlier?
I'd vote yes.
Would you vote yes?
Sure.
Ryan, because this is a three, we can't have it. We can't. Would you vote yes, too? All right. So my vote, being the chair, I don't have to vote. I'm only the tiebreaker. Mr. Dan Shores is actually in the house. Mr. Shores, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And am I interpreting that correctly when you say vote? Does that mean you're going to vote for me, or is that...
Well, I wouldn't vote for you, because first and foremost, as a journalist, I don't vote.
Oh, wait a second. That doesn't make any sense.
If I vote, I've decided.
Okay. All right. I think I see that logic somewhere, but...
I'm a journalist, so the idea is for me not to... If I vote for somebody, if I choose, that's the problem. Because my job is to be able to talk to not only you... But maybe your Democratic opponent come if you're fortunate to win the Republican nomination come September, and if it's you swearing off against Mr. Keating, I'm getting the look from Christine James, the look of death. I do not vote.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify. So you're saying on voting day, on election day, the first Tuesday in November, you're saying that you don't go in and cast a vote.
No, I'm the guy who's outside interviewing all the people who have voted for one or the other.
Okay, so you're saying you're playing or you play a significant role in the political process, just not voting.
That is correct. My job is to be, how can I say it, give folks a chance to hear from the candidates, mm-hmm. to hear from all the candidates,
of course,
and give them a chance to understand who you are, mm-hmm. and then make a proper vote.
That sounds good to me. Sounds like the American system. Freedom of speech is alive and well in here in Marshfield, Massachusetts, as well as across the country, I hope.
Well, as we had talked about earlier, before you had entered the room, you will make the fourth Republican. Mm-hmm. There are four Republicans that are vying for the nod, correct, come September.
And that's my understanding. I haven't heard of anyone else enter the race, so that's correct.
And when does everybody have to have the signatures in by in order to be a part of this process? I mean, can anybody still, although albeit crazy, take out papers within the next week and make an attempt to get all those signatures?
Sure, that's certainly possible. The first week in May is when the deadline for the submitting the signatures to the Secretary of State is. Mm. And each candidate needs 2,000 certified signatures to get on the ballot. Which means you need to collect more than that in terms of raw signatures, because not all signatures are approved by the town clerks, and so it is a significant effort. But if somebody wanted to pull papers and try to get on the ballot, they certainly could do that since it's April.
Well, that definitely would be very very interesting.
So how are you doing with your signatures?
We're doing very well. We're actually almost done with our effort. So.
Congratulations, that's a lot of work.
Thank you very much. Yep, we have a good force of people working for the campaign, working on behalf of the campaign, and we are very, very fortunate to have the type of volunteer support that we have so far, and we're very excited about our campaign. We're very excited about this campaign now and also going forward. As you know, it's a very long primary season here in Massachusetts. The primary is on September 9th, and so this campaign is going to go through the spring and summer, and we'll find out who the winner is on September 9th.
Well, what we're going to do right now is we're going to learn more about you after we take a little bit of a break. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk and more Dan Shores. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD. Hey! This is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome back here on Monday Night Talk. As you see, we're kind of like doing chit chat between the break, kind of getting acquainted and. Where do we want to start, Paula? Where do we want to start with Mr. Shores?
Well, why don't we start sort of a little bit from the beginning? So talk a little bit about, you grew up here on the South Shore.
That's correct.
South Shore guy.
Yep. Yeah, South
lots
Shore.
Lots of different parts, and you've had an interesting background, family background, very physical, cranberries right. and logs.
That's right. I actually was born in Boston, and until I was 4 years old, I lived in Weymouth. My parents... we're high school sweethearts at Braintree High School.
Oh, very cool.
1962 graduation date. And so they moved to Weymouth. And then when I was 4 years old, I'm one of five kids, and the whole family moved down to Carver. And my dad was a chemistry teacher at Silver Lake High School, was also a football coach. And, supporting five kids, he was the sole breadwinner. And he decided to go into, he was selling firewood on the side. He's a very physical guy. He was a big athlete and played football in college. And anyway, he liked to work, and he ended up selling firewood. Then he translated that into a logging business. And so from a young age, I can remember the chainsaws, hearing the chainsaws outside. My dad was always up to something. And eventually he roped us in. I have two brothers. He roped all the brothers in to help him with the woods. And as his business expanded, that became actually a pretty solid summer gig when you're a teenager going out in the woods and logging.
Where are you in the sibling matrix?
I'm number 4 or 5.
Oh,
the second.
That's always fun.
I'm the penultimate child, so I the second to last child, and I had two.
So you're that close to being the baby, but not quite.
That's right, and I still blame my younger sister for that. So I was like, So that's, you know, so and then also my first job I ever had was weeding a cranberry bog.
Oh, brother.
And I remember I earned enough money. I love to fish. I earned enough money to buy a fishing pole, and I just remember that day. It was a Daiwa. I won't go down that road, but I remember exactly the purchase. And actually, it's sort of, I look back on my childhood. You know, I would tell my parents, when I was a kid, I'd say I'm going down to fish. I'd get my fishing pole, get on a bike, and ride down to Ward Pond, which is where I grew up, and fish. And it would, you know, it was, and I'd come home. And now, when you hear that people are concerned about finding needles when their kids are going out, and I'm worried about that kind of thing. It's very troubling.
That
is a very troubling issue that needs to be confronted by the leadership in our community, and we can't stop. The leadership in the community has to be vigilant about that issue, because it's rotting our future away.
Is it strictly just the leadership in the community, or is it a matter of that the state, that not only the state government but the federal government needs to do more in regards to combating the opioid drug epidemic, sure, that we're upon right now?
Sure. I mean, there's no one fix silver bullet issue, but I think we're in a time now where people are looking to the government for the answers to our problems, and I don't think that's where it exists. I think it resides right at home. Okay. It resides in the family. It was, you know, parents, teachers, anybody in the community. You set an example for kids. Everything that you do, kids watch. And if you slip a little bit and you give in something, kids see that,
like,
and
sponges.
It gives them an out. Right.
Like sponges. They absorb everything.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's more of a local, the strength will come locally. And I think certainly there can be help at the government, you know, at the state and federal government levels. But it starts at home, and it starts with you. It starts with me. It starts with people setting a good example, and you yourself lead a good responsible life, and then that's really what's gonna, I think that's a big part of it, the solution.
Now, we hear that, I mean, how you started out and growing up, I mean, how about as far as, where'd you go from, you know, under your father to, you know, spreading your own wings and maybe collecting more education as you went along?
Yeah, and so I ended up applying to college, as a lot of high school kids do, and I got into a number of colleges. I was accepted at Boston College. I was accepted at some other schools. Oh. And I was also accepted at the University of New Hampshire. And the University of New Hampshire gave me a very solid financial aid package. And so that was a part of the reason why I went there. But they also had an engineering program. And I ended up studying mechanical engineering. I chose that. My grandfather was a physics teacher. My uncle Billy was a microbiology professor. My uncles are engineers. My dad was a chemistry teacher. When we were growing up, I was surrounded by science and technology and these eggheads, and so it just seemed natural to go into engineering.
But from there, you went on to law school.
I did, yeah. I
how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, it was certainly I think at the end of the day, it was ended up being a calling. I was after I graduated with an engineering degree, I worked as a consultant for a number of years, and wanted to go to graduate school. I wanted to expand my intellectual horizons, and was considering getting an MBA or law school. And ultimately, the law school really pulled me and drew me intellectually. And right from the very first day of law school, I knew, I felt like I was home. I felt like, you know, that there was no attorneys in my family. No one ever, in fact, people would discourage me from being a lawyer because there are so many lawyers, and you hear all the negative things about lawyers. But I listened to the inner voice, and when I sat in my first property class, I knew that's where I wanted to be. And contrary to a lot of folks that went through law school, I loved every minute of it. It was a great experience.
And then you spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C., is that correct?
That's right. I ended up, actually started at law school at Catholic University, and then did very well with my marks my first year. And then I was accepted to Georgetown University Law Center, and I served on the law journal at Georgetown, and was recruited out of Georgetown to work at a law firm in Washington, D.C. And so that's why, you know, I ended up practicing in Washington, D.C. for about 7 years. And my first year of law school was 9/11. That was 2001. And I spent about 12 years in Washington.
Where is your practice now?
My practice is in Sandwich.
Okay.
I moved back. You know, it's not Washington, D.C. If you've ever spent any time there, it's a great place. But it's not, to me, it wasn't home. When you're from Massachusetts, and it's in your blood, it never left me. And it got to the point in my career where it was either I was going to stay in Washington, D.C. Forever, or I was going to come back home. And I made the decision to come back home, and I have not regretted. I love being back home in Massachusetts.
Have you ever been appointed to serve on boards? Have you ever run for selectman or planning board,
no,
or anything like that?
No, I am not a politician.
Okay.
I'm proud to say that, in a certain respect, you know, I do believe that. I know that politicians are, you know, can be chastised, and you know, people have issues with politicians and certain politicians. I do believe that it's an honorable calling. It's public service. And that's the way I view it. That's the way I'm approaching it. I'm also one of the people that believe in term limits. I don't think that someone should be in the same position forever. And specifically, I think we have term limits for the president. You know, we should have it for the Senate.
Sure.
I believe in 2 6-year terms, and then for Congress, I believe in 4 2-year terms. And you know, if a congressman wants to go on to become a senator, that's okay, I think. But I think it's healthy. I think we want to be able to get new people and new blood into the process.
What made you run for this particular seat? What was it about this particular race that you said, I got to get involved with it?
Well, I think it, you know, it's... First of all, the district. Well, let me kind of back up one step. We're in a time. I'm a Reagan Republican. I've always believed that in the individual, the power of the individual, and individual responsibility, and I also believe that getting the government out of the way of people's, getting the government out of people's lives and out of the way of business is the path to prosperity. And I think that's where we need to be. And at this time, the pendulum has swung so far opposite to where we're supposed to be. It's compelling. I think it's compelling a lot of people throughout the country to run for office, to try to help, to try to take the lead and try to help this country, because you know, obviously the healthcare law, Obamacare, is Exhibit A, but it's sort of it's right down the line, and our leadership, our president, believes that more government is the answer. Our Massachusetts congressional delegation believes that more government is the answer to our problems, and I absolutely disagree. I think that we don't suffer. We do not suffer from a failure of the American system. We don't suffer from a failure from the American spirit. The coals just need to be stoked a little bit. The American spirit is always there. We suffer from an unprecedented failure of leadership in this country. And at some point, and I believe that it's going to be in this year, in 2014, the people are going to push back. And because the people have a very, very important power, and that's the power of the vote. And that is never more important than it is right now. And we have the power, we the people have the power to vote the right people into office and vote the wrong ones out. And I think that's what we should do.
I think you're saying some great things, and I do think that the power should be in the people's hands. So talk a little bit about maybe the two or three issues that motivate you the most that you're going to want to focus on that will be part of your campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I think the central, we have 17.3 trillion dollars in debt. Every year the Congress doesn't balance the budget. We run a budget deficit every single year. and we have, you know, widespread unemployment. Under this president, we've the debt has gone up $9 trillion, and he just blames the previous administration. So absolutely, priority number one is to pay down the debt, have a plan to pay down the debt, balance the budget, and get us on a balance in terms of our fiscal solvency at the national level. How that happens is, one of the key aspects to that, which is the second part, is through economic prosperity. I believe that we can be prosperous again. I truly believe that. And the way that we do it is we need to create an environment where businesses have the certainty and incentive to grow. And that means government getting out of their way to a large extent, but then also, there are certain incentives. It's not going to do everything, the incentives, but when you're running a business, I run my own law practice and I represent small businesses, so I see what they go through on a daily basis. And I go through it myself. You really, if you're wondering whether a regulation is going to change, or if you're burdened by administrative red tape, has a chilling effect on your ability to grow your business. And so I think that I'll give you an example. When my dad had his logging business in the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan was president, he was able to deduct, when he got into business, he was considering getting into business, and then he had to buy a piece of equipment, a skidder, which was I think it was over $100,000, which at that time was a significant expense. He knew that, he was gonna have to outlay that money in order to, but he had a business plan which saw that he would be able to pay it back. The government gave him a significant tax deduction in the first taxable year. I believe it was 100% tax deduction in the first taxable year. So he had the incentive to do that. And then the banks were willing to loan him money. So everything was moving. Things were moving again. Things were moving. Right now, with Dodd-Frank, you're seeing the small banks getting absorbed by the larger banks, and you're seeing small businesses having a difficult time borrowing money. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's everything sort of tight and puckered up, and it's just I just think it's a leadership issue too, and it's also the leaders also set the tone for what kind of an economic environment that we're going to have.
Well, you mentioned a key word, and that's the economic environment. I know that recently we learned that the national unemployment is sitting at, 6.7%? What's right. Your thought on that? I mean, how do you feel that the policies of the current administration have done? What do they lack? And do you feel that they're going to continue to fail on the course that they're on?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest example there is the Congressional Budget Office came out and said, that Obamacare was going to cost the economy over 2 million jobs by 2017. Mm. And as an analytical person, I see, especially in the field of politics, you see a lot of statements, and I don't take things at face value. But when I looked at the report, they said that the rationale, the basis for that statement, they said Obamacare provides an implicit tax on earning more money. Now, that is not the America that I grew up in, and that's certainly not the America that we need to be. I think that we need to incentivize success and incentivize growth. So the 6% unemployment rate, that's nothing to cheer about. I mean, and that is not reflective of the individuals that are not seeking jobs anymore, that just became so discouraged.
They're off the radar. We don't even know where they are anymore, right?
And so here's what I believe is endemic of leadership that we have right now, the failure of leadership that we have right now. I've seen figures that in New Bedford, which is part of the 9th Congressional District, it's 10 to 12% unemployment, almost double what the national rate is. And it's been like that. And that is a failure of absolute failure of leadership, in my opinion, to try to not address that problem.
And Dan, one thing you're talking about businesses want certainty. And one of the things I saw a lot in my role at the chamber is when they don't know year to year how they're going to be taxed, what's going to happen. There's a lot of waiting around Obamacare. one of the things that's happening on the national level is the redefinition of full-time work. Mm. Is it 30 hours? Is it 40 hours?
40 hours, right.
And they want to bring it down to 30 hours. Are there some things that maybe you see along those lines that could be addressed at a federal level?
Well, I mean, I think we, you know, it's actually a little bit troubling. I mean, we're arguing over, whether someone is working full time or not full time, and back to that figure about the 2 million lost jobs, that was a part of the rationale. Also, was that they said, you know, if someone didn't work full time, then that means they would get, you know, based on the law, that means they would get certain benefits. And so it's reacting. I guess the answer is it's reacting. When we're reacting to the government laws and the government bureaucracy, and it's controlling our behavior that much, that's a problem. I want to see people work 40 or 50 hours a week. When you love what you're doing, you don't even think about how many hours you're working. And that's what this country is all about. It's about following your dreams. I mean, we were given a gift with this country, and it's being underutilized, and we're being told by the federal government how many hours we need to work to do this, how many hours. It's mind-boggling to me, and I think that people just need to hear. People need to have leaders, in the government, in the nonprofit sector, in schools. Need to hear leaders explain like what they believe that that the right America is, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Again, you are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, and our guest for this segment is Dan Shores. He is the Republican. Well, he is one of the four Republicans seeking the nomination come September for the 9th Massachusetts Congressional District. I got to ask you, what are you hearing from the folks within the district? Let's bring things back to the district. What are you hearing from the folks? It seems like every election, probably one of the key things I hear is jobs. But is that it? Is it just jobs, or are there other issues that they want you to focus on if they pick you?
Yeah, and as a non-politician, I hear all the same thing, and it's like noise. Like when you read the paper, we need more jobs, and then
there's a redundancy.
There's a redundancy, and but to answer your question, universally and actually without question, I'm hearing working families that pay their bills, that do the right thing, and they turn around and they see the issues with EBT cards. They see people being encouraged to get on the dole I'm not saying that we don't need a safety net for people that are in need, but people are saying, people I'm hearing, that there are folks that can work that aren't working, and that's a very frustrating thing for folks. And I think that's a universal, thing that I'm hearing and out and talking with folks.
Yeah, whether someone to get free services or to be able to cheat the system,
right?
You hear it more and more. It seems as though it's being encouraged, and it's for folks who do work hard and who pay their taxes.
That's
and,
right.
You know, do the right thing. It seems as though it's kind of it's
right.
working against them.
Right,
being
discouraged.
I would agree. Somebody shares a story every week of what they saw themselves at a Walmart or something.
Yeah, and I think the working families are the backbone of this community and of this country, and the working families deserve representation too, and that's what I plan to provide.
So Dan, this district is very diverse. So if you go from the South Coast to Cape Cod.
Yep.
To the South Shore. What do you see sort of between those different areas, and what are you hearing?
It's really interesting. At first, I said there are kind of three worlds. Growing up on the South Shore has its own feel. The Cape and Islands, having spent a lot of time there, it has its own feel. And same thing with the South Coast. But it's actually five worlds, because Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket are two different worlds.
That's
so
true.
We kind of joke about that. But but yeah, I mean, there's certainly on the South Shore, there's a lot of I think universally the way that they're the same. I'll start there, is that you do have this there are a lot of working families, small business are the fabric of all the communities. I think on the South Coast it has there's an influence, I think, more from the Providence metropolitan area, it feels like. And but I love spending time down and campaigning down on the South Coast. I just love the people from New Bedford and Fall River, and they have so much character. Especially after spending time in Washington D.C., where there's the only working class in Washington D.C. is they're like service industry. But I just the blue collar feel that I get from the South Coast in particular, I just absolutely love. And there's some great restaurants down there too.
Oh yeah, some of those Portuguese restaurants.
Oh, absolutely unbelievable.
We just got a few more minutes with you, and I gotta ask you: is have you had a chance to take a look at yourself compared to whether it's the gentlemen that you're competing with for the nomination, or looking at the bigger picture, and that is the incumbent who's sitting in the seat, Jim Keating. Is where have you had a chance to take a look at and focus your campaign? Are you basically battling it out with the other three guys to get the nomination, or is it a matter of letting voters know that you're focused on the guy who's in the seat, what he's doing right or what he's not doing right, and it's probably more than likely what he's not doing right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we know that there are four candidates, and I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't expect to win the Republican nomination. I think you'll find from the, you know, as the campaign goes on and folks are get to know the candidates better, you're going to find on the issues, for the most part, the Republican candidates are probably going to be on the same page. But yeah, absolutely, I believe that, you know, there's certainly, you know, stark differences in views and approaches to problems that I have, is, you know, compared to Congressman Keating, and I intend to take my campaign on to Congressman Keating and win this election and be the first Republican elected as a congressman in Massachusetts in quite a long time.
So I'd say we've only been able to scratch the surface here,
it's only been like 35 minutes.
I know, it goes by so quickly. So if voters want to know more about you, are you in person anywhere? Are you online anywhere? Where can they learn more?
Yeah, the best way is through the website, and that's danshores2014.com. So that's the best way, and there's, you know, I have an active social media, you know, account and things like that. But, you know, and I'm also out in the district, and on the website, I will be, you know, posting events. I'm going to, you know, coming up, we're going to be posting some events that we're going to be having throughout the district. You know, we're coming down, you know, we're finishing up our signature drive. And so, you know, I've spent time at the local supermarkets, Hannaford's and things like that. Yep. So they might see me at the supermarket. But pretty much, you know, I'll be knocking on folks' doors, and you'll see me one way or the other. But if someone wants to contact me or the campaign, the best way to do it is through the website, you know, and I return all the messages, and so I'm happy to speak with anybody one-on-one. I'm happy to meet with someone one-on-one. They want to talk about what we're facing today as a region and a country.
Anything that you haven't been asked by us here this evening, or maybe any other panels that or folks that you've been interviewed by that kind of, you know, you want to make sure you let folks know about you and your campaign?
No, I generally, there's, you know, not really, but I do want people to know, though, that we will fix these problems. I believe we will fix the problems. We will balance the budget. We will get out of debt. We will become prosperous again. We will have a coherent foreign policy again in this country.
That's big.
And, we can do this. We put a man on the moon in a very short period of time. We're the leaders in the world. We are the beacon of light and hope for the world. And I think we just need to remember, I think for a long time, maybe the last 8 years, 6 years, we've been told how much we're really not that great, and there's something wrong with us. And let's apologize for being Americans. And you know what? Let's look at what we've done. We've done a heck of a lot in this world, and I think we can continue to do it if we have the right leadership.
I would say, you know, it sounds like your roots, you know, where you were really grew up in a good, strong family.
Values.
Maybe, yeah, values. Mm. Really shape your views and sort of how you want to see our country be great again.
I totally agree, and I view this economic crisis, the debt, and I don't view that as an economic issue. I view it is a moral issue to me, because we're passing down to the next generation, you know, something that they never really had responsibility for, and it's not right. And we can do that. And with the greatest generation, you know, fought Hitler and you know, saved the world for so many years, and they sacrificed and they put their lives on the line. What are we doing about the future? I think we can do something about the future.
He, of course, is Dan Shores. He will be, of course, out and about, probably still collecting signatures to be on the ballot in September, September 9th, I think you said. If you want to find out more about Dan Shores, who is looking for your vote for the the Massachusetts 9th Congressional District, go to his website, danshores2014.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We'll definitely have to have you. Of course, we have your opponents in too, but we want to get you guys back in again when we get closer to September. So we can kind of see how maybe things have changed. Maybe we'll try to get all of you in at the same time. We'll see what happens. You know what we do here at 95.9 WATD. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, we will speak with Ray Belanger. Don't go anywhere here on 95.9 WATD.